Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Wherever there are people, whenever people gather together, you know, since the beginning of history, people have gathered together and created communities and societies, tribes, being together. And they and we, you know, have done this for protection, for efficiency, to share the various tasks that had to be done, to support each other, and to take care of each other. It's necessary for us as humans to create these kinds of communities, which provide a feeling of connection, friendship, and trust. All these things are critical for humanity's well-being. But in addition to those things, when people gather together in societies, they create something else. Something we could call it an economy, which is a system for exchanging things. And we exchange things in order to fill various needs and to improve our lives, to raise our standard of living. And the basis for an economy that is that will benefit everyone is a set of understood rules and procedures that provide everyone with a sense of fair exchange. Fair exchange. And in an economy that people create, they must feel that they obtain value, what we'll call value. They must feel they're obtaining some value when they exchange one thing for another. And they need to feel that their system of economy provides them with a sense of a fair exchange. Now, in the modern world, in the modern economy, we say, people say, oh, you have to get your money's worth. You know, when you make an exchange, you have to get your money's worth. This is kind of the rule. And in our modern world, in our modern material world, we are reminded of that point constantly, of this principle. Get your money's worth. And we are reminded by businesses and by media and by various institutions, and they all promote the value of various products and services so that we will be encouraged to engage in this exchange. And that's what happens in the material world of goods and services and things that we need to keep us safe and warm and well-fed and well-clothed in our daily life. But in the non-material world, in the world where there are no dollars exchanged or things that we can put a dollar sign on, who is it that reminds us to get our money's worth or get our value? Who is that reminds us about value and about spending wisely? Who reminds us? Is it the same agencies that remind us in the material world? The media, institutions, businesses? Maybe it's family and friends that remind us, get your money's worth. And yes, they all do. But in the non-material world, who reminds us? In the non-material world, actually, it's necessary for us to remind ourselves, to continually ask ourselves, am I spending my life wisely? And what is it that is truly valuable? This is the question we have to ask ourselves. And the answers depend on our view of what life is and our view of what life means. And what is the meaning of this thing called value in our life? What is the meaning? So we ask ourselves these questions about, am I spending my life wisely? And the problem is when we come up with answers to such questions, there can be bias in those answers. Because people easily fool themselves. It is our practice that can clarify these questions and these answers. And it's only by clarifying these questions that we can understand the fundamental nature of our lives. So our practice is about continually reminding ourselves to reflect and to be attentive and not to take our life for granted and not to treat it casually. And when those things are important to us, we will develop a firm and dedicated practice. So an unbiased understanding of life reveals the nature of what's called value and will reveal if we are spending our life in a meaningful way. When we observe our life and experience our life carefully, we see two forces at work. One is obviously that our life is moving towards our death. Everybody understands this. The death of our everyday self. And we know we are moving towards that. Inevitable. But there's another force that's going on that sometimes we see, sometimes we feel, sometimes it passes us by, and that is the observation that we are moving towards something bigger than our everyday self. That we are moving towards wisdom and towards oneness. This is the second force that's taking place. we all of us obviously are aware of the first force. And when we are not aware of the second force, that we are moving towards something bigger, when we are not aware of that force, we will not feel our life will not feel valuable in a large sense when we don't feel that second force. Because if we don't feel the second force of moving towards oneness and wisdom, it's as if we are, you know, waiting to die, because all we see is the first force. And then we wonder if life has any intrinsic or universal value. If we don't see, we don't feel, if we're not aware or observe that second force, then our whole life will emphasize our personal side, our personal value. And we will overemphasize, we will put emphasis on everyday things, ordinary things. And we will misunderstand what is time, what is place, what is body, and what is mind. And if we don't feel that second force, only feel the first one, our life will be limited to the influence of the advertisements and the media and all the opinions that float around and all the biases that exist in the world. And that can turn out to be a life of waiting, waiting to collect the promises of material things, emotional things, pleasure, success, wealth, fame. If we become aware of the second force, we lose interest in those things, material and emotional things. Our interest shifts. So it is the unaware mind that cannot perceive the essence of life and the essence of all the things in our life. The unaware mind can only perceive the appearances of things. This is a mind that is caught by promises. And the messages that come from somewhere else, not from ourself. So we have to allow our mind to be subtle and to turn to practice if we are to move towards wisdom and to know why we're here and to know what is the true value of our life and how not to get caught by promises. We are infinitely complex, aren't we? And we have potential to do many, many things. For the most part, we can do whatever we want to make us feel useful and important. If we feel that our current activity, our current job, our current situation does not satisfy us, we can change. We can change what we do. We can change what we want to do when we want to make our everyday life feel valuable. But the fundamental value of life does not change. our practice is about allowing our wisdom to reveal life's fundamental value that we always have with us, that we don't have to pursue. When we practice that way, whatever we do in life will be valuable in a universal sense. And we will feel that things are always going well, despite difficulties and hardships and confusions. And in our society today, in this culture, we have a great deal of freedom. We have political freedom, and we have the freedom to make many, many choices. And we can be independent in how we live our life, fairly independent, where we live, what we do, who we choose to be with. We have this independence, and so in that way we are very fortunate. But our society and our community cannot give us freedom in the true sense. True freedom means not being trapped by a narrow view of life. True freedom means to understand the true value of life. Our practice, our spiritual practice, is very wide, very big. It has no limits. It places no restrictions on how or where we explore, how or where we ask important questions. Our practice is about being calm and still and introspective, as well as being active and engaged and responsive to our daily life. When we do both, when we can be oriented both ways, our practice does extend everywhere. And our understanding will go beyond ordinary thinking. So in Zen practice, we emphasize that it is through our ordinary activities that we can feel the fundamental value of our life and the true meaning of existence. So as you know, in the monastery, the monks in the monastery are trained to emphasize one task at a time. Do one thing at a time. Do it completely. Be mindful of each task, independent of what that task is. When you peel a vegetable in the kitchen, or you next day sweep the cushions, or the next day mop the floor, be mindful of each task equally. That way they are all important and they all have equal value. But in our everyday world, especially around here, the tasks that we are faced with, they seem to interfere with each other. So we have created multitasking, where we don't emphasize just one thing at a time. And when we do that, when our tasks seem to have different values, we evaluate them, we judge them, and we make priorities. So some may get done well and some may be done very casually. When we understand the value, the true value of our life, we know that all tasks are equal. Making the soup for the evening meal is not more important than sweeping the cushions. All tasks have equal value. Even though some may have a greater importance in a relative sense. You know, if you forget to sweep the cushion, there's no big impact. But if you forget to make the soup, there may be some fuss. But even though there's a difference in relative value, all tasks need to be taken care of with equal care. This is our practice. And this way of being in the world leads to freedom. So our modern life is quite complex and becoming more and more complex. Many activities confront us, or we are confronted with many activities that we feel are necessary to take care of our daily life. When we feel overwhelmed by all these activities, then it becomes necessary to narrow them down to some immediate range, so that we can maintain a capacity to do each one completely and not sacrifice the quality of some of those tasks because we are overwhelmed. We need to feel that we can do everything that comes our way completely. And we need to bring to our effort a feeling of readiness. I'm ready to do it. Feeling of readiness with an undistracted awareness. This is our practice. Of course, at the same time, we don't shut down all those other activities that we've maybe had to set aside for a while. We continue our background awareness of them. We know they're there, but take care later. We continue our background awareness, and we are always ready to exchange one activity for another whenever it's necessary. If we can have composure living this way, we will have a balanced life, and we will understand the meaning of its value. Does anyone have a question? Does anyone have a question tonight?
Les, thank you for your talk. I was wondering if you could say a little bit about getting value in our personal relationships with each other.
Getting value?
Yes.
It starts with our readiness to give value. Before we can think of getting value, we have to be ready to provide it. And then I think the value flows. Yes, Richard.
I heard a saying that a fool knows the price of everything, the value of nothing. This seems apt.
Okay.
And in my view, like one of the biggest, maybe the biggest problem in the world is extreme inequality and extreme poverty that exists here and all around the world. And yet people vote billionaires into power and you know, venerate them, and I don't understand that. What can be done about that? What's the mindset that leads to people endorsing that kind of extreme inequality?
I think the biggest problem that we have is indifference and not caring. That's why we have poverty and all that suffering and homelessness. There needs to be less indifference and more caring from those of us that can do something about that. And so you asked, what is the mindset? Well, it was recited 2,000 years ago. The Buddha said the cause of suffering is greed. Still with us. So as long as people are motivated by greed and pursue their personal interests, they will be indifferent to the suffering of others. (Clears throat) So how is it fixed? Well, we haven't yet come up with a clear answer. But some people are trying. Still. Thank you. Yes, please.
You said you have to do one task at a time, focus and do it perfectly. And at the same time, yes, we all know that it is such that the tasks are too many to be done, and every task is important. But at the same time, even if you decide to do one task at a time and want to do it fully focused and, you know, be satisfied about it and do it fully, problem is if someone else is not doing their task and, you know, somebody has to do it. It has to be done. Basically, that task has to be done. But somebody is not having the capacity or willing to, then those staff also fall in your basket. So it is very difficult. It's nice. Yes, it's the right way to do one task at a time and give it full perfection and full dedication. But when you have so many in your basket, that's when the challenge is, like, everything has to be done and so many tasks are at an equal priority. I mean, things are depending on those tasks. How do you bring your mind to be able to do those tasks sincerely to the complete satisfaction?
We have to have a little bit of the mind of a monk. So focused on what's in front of us. And not let the mind go there. Just this. But if we do something and the mind is continually distracted, floating around, we end the day feeling that we have done nothing but float around. So for our own well-being, we have to have the mind of a monk as much as we can. It's a big problem in the world today, which is so speedy and complex. It's a very big problem. But I think each of us has to find a way to do it, to bring that balance. Thank you.
I often find it difficult to complete a task when I feel that it's boring or it's beneath me or I deserve better.
Hmm.
So how can we work on mitigating our ego to get done the things that we need to get done?
You came to the right place. That's everybody's question. That's everybody's challenge. And that's what we're all working on. That's one of the things we're all working on. So the important point is, if you really feel strongly about that, and you don't like that, you say, I don't want to be this way. I don't want to be bored. I don't want to be distracted. If you really feel strongly, that gives you the inspiration to practice. But if you say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just be bored. Well, then we're just waiting to die. Thank you for your question. It's a very important question.
So, thank you so much for your speech. I feel like I've lived my entire life only being aware of the first force that you mentioned, and I don't know, not at all the second one. And without oversharing, lately I've been through tough time for obvious reasons that I was starting to stop seeing what the value of life was. And so this is my first time coming here, and I have a question on what would be beginner's tips, if you will, to go on the path of practicing and being more aware.
What, say again, what the question? I didn't quite hear all of it.
So my question is, what would be beginner's tips?
Hint?
Tips.
Oh, tips?
Or, yes.
Okay.
Advice.
Oh, okay. I think the most important advice is begin. And you can begin by joining, following what everybody else is doing and just blend right in. And that way you don't have to ask all kinds of questions about what do I do next. Just follow along and let other people guide and see what unfolds from that experience. Just watch and be patient, see what happens. You don't have to answer an awful lot of complex questions all at once. Can't do it. It's too troublesome to try. So just you go along and join the rest of the fishes in the ocean and enjoy the swimming. Feel the freedom of practice and the freedom of the swimming. This, I think, is the starting technique for beginner. The first time tonight? Do you live nearby, or how far do you live? Oh, okay. That makes it easy. Thank you for your question. Umar?
I have a friend who had gone to Greece. And he wanted to go and do an apprenticeship with a writer who used to live on the island. And he did that, but he brought back photographs and that he had taken, and he had handed his camera over to this writer who he had gone and done the apprenticeship with. Now, the interesting thing was that when I started looking at the pictures that he had taken and the writer had taken, there was such a huge difference in those pictures. And I asked him, I said, does he only write? He said, no, he paints too. And the interesting thing was that the tool that was given to him, which was a camera in his hand, he used it like a paintbrush. And when I was working at Best Buy, people used to come and talk to me all the time about cameras and things like that, and they would say, oh, how many megapixels and all this stuff, and if I get this camera, I'll become this great photographer. And it was interesting because that gap between those two things, that having a certain machinery will make you better at something, did not compute in my head. And I was like, this is really interesting that people have this, you know, false thing going on in their head that if I get something amazing, the tool, it will just make me such a better person. And it just, I went back and it suddenly came to me that it's not the tool, but the person who is behind the tool that makes all the difference in the world. And it's given me a better appreciation and understanding of how people do things with just simple tools in their hands. And the other thing that I saw was that to me what came out of this was also listening to your talk was this whole idea of attachment that we have to things. That if I have this and if I have this and if I have this, it's not usually the thing, it's you that makes a difference. It's like somebody's arranged those flowers, it's the simplest thing in the world, and somebody's taken the time and the effort and the concern to put the flowers in the flowers. This is, you know, when people think technology is going to solve all these problems, we're so attached to it. So my question is there a way to sort of separate ourselves for a little while from technology, or have a shift in our mind where we can actually think of technology as just a tool, not something that is a complete and total necessity?
Well, the products of technology, you know, are so attractive to us, and so we become so addicted, so excited, so attached, and we become overwhelmed. And so you raise the key question: can we set it aside? If at some point we realize that we've become so attached to technology, and we're not paying attention to each other, and we get a picture of ourselves as a robot. And we don't like the look of that picture, then we will find a way to make some space in our life for the non-material and the non-technical. And so you put out a sign a few weeks ago, a small sign that says, please leave your cell phone somewhere else, or some sign like... Well, silence your cell phone. Well, I often see people coming here with the phone. Opportunity, come here to do this practice, an opportunity to find that space you're talking about. But the attachment is so strong that we let the technology come into the space. And we said, leave it out. Leave it away. And put it aside for a while, and we can create some space. So, some of us met for coffee this morning, and Travis was telling us about his family last night, dinner. And he kept calling his daughter to come to dinner. And she said, okay, and then she didn't show up. And he called, okay, come on down to dinner. Well, okay, be in a minute. And he finally went upstairs, and she just couldn't get away. She just couldn't connect with her friends. And he's... So it is a problem, but we can do it if we say, wait, that's not who I want to be. Thank you. Yes, please.
So my question is, what if when you wake up in the morning and you feel like, oh, it's just another day and it's just one day closer to your death, so what could you do about it, and what could you change your mind about that one day?
So you can turn your mind to asking, what interesting things are going to happen today? I can hardly wait. We have to have a certain sense of optimism that says, at the end of today, I will have gained experiences in something. I will have gained more experience today. And so, by the end of today, I will be a little bit wiser. If we have that understanding about our life, then you'd be very happy to get up the next morning. Thank you. What does it say? Nevertheless, she persisted. Ah. Very good. Very good. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.